The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Cooking Like a Pro. You have found us here on KCNR. This is Chef Cal with Mrs. Chef.
Hello.
Mrs. Chef DiMicuro. Mrs.
Hello.
Chef Krista.
Hello.
I like Mrs. Chef. Does that make me Mr. Chef? Anyway, you have found us again, Cooking Like a Pro. Cooking Like a Pro podcast as well. You can find us there. And, boy, I'm excited because we got... I came across all these old menus today, and I'm always excited about the old days. You know, you're looking through these menus, and
I'd be curious to see who else keeps menus. Goes different. Well, you can't really take them out anymore because they don't make them take.
Well, you don't need them. I mean,
everything's digital.
This was before they had, you know, computers and technology and all this. I mean, this Joe DiMaggio menu I have, like from 1923. All right, I mean, we have. Just, you can look at this thing and you know that, you know, I wish I was back in these days. All right. I'm going to try to find something here. How about, grilled or charbroiled salmon steak with lemon butter sauce, $1.75. You know, and you probably got bread and soup and salad. And I remember my dad, I said, you know, that like the only advice he gave me. And I said, when we started the restaurant, he said, make sure people get full. So we, at DiMicuro's, we were there for 18 years, opening back in 1989, and an 18-year run there, and we got soup, salad, bread, garlic butter, I mean.
There was an a la carte back then. Everything was full service.
Yeah.
How much was a drink on that menu? Like 5 cents?
Well, who invented a la carte? That person should be shot. But here we got, cocktails, a grasshopper, 75 cents.
For a drink.
A drink, 75 cents. Oh. Bacardi rum, 75 cents. Champagne, a buck. A daiquiri, 75 cents. A Tom Collins, 65 cents. Wow, they got, Black Label, you name, Old Fashioned, 60 cents for an Old Fashioned.
You can't even get a cup of coffee now for that.
No, I got a cup of coffee the other day. It was $3.50. I'm like, man, how many refills can I drink here for $3.50?
Wow, and was there anything other? Was it just black?
There was just, well, that's the only way I drink my coffee. I'm kind of a black rifle coffee. I just started drinking my coffee black because I can taste it, and everything you add to it, it's bad anyway. You know, you're just adding just tons of calories and sweetener and all of that. So I just get a really good coffee, put a few sprinkles of some Celtic salt in there to enhance that flavor.
Get rid of the bitterness.
And we're ready to go. And I don't know how we got that direction. But I'll tell you, these menus I got from Philip, my dad's, my uncle, Uncle Philip. And he was filleted fish down on the wharf, San Francisco, for 40 years. So that's kind of where a lot of my upbringing. I've got a lot of that information in the,
I like to get, takeout menus. I mean, I know people are weird like me, but I always collected takeout menus and then bring them home. And then back when you didn't have the internet, they would all go in big Ziploc bags. So I'd have access to any menu to anywhere.
Well, see, the thing was a little different for me because I actually just loved to steal menus. And he says, well, they're going to reprint them again anyway. But I used to, you know, stick them down the back. You know how the Italian waiters put their checkbook down the back of their back of their pants, which, to be honest, was disgusting.
So how do you lift a menu that's that big?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's where they put their guest checkbook. So that's where I would just put the menu and then just, you know, put my coat on. But that's how I got the one from Original Joe's. I got Original Joe menu, which started down in San Francisco. And, you know, just they also, I think they had the big one was in San Francisco, but they've been around for 50 years. And you look at these pricing, like, you know, prime rib, you know, was, you know, $15. And now what's prime rib? 40.
65
in some places. And sandwiches for, you know, $3-$4 each. And, but, you know, Original Joe's, they, again, the food was different. Food was different back then. And then I can go forward to Napa And here's Don Giovanni, one of my favorite restaurants there. And
yep. That's a takeout menu that I took because it was the day of our anniversary. So anytime we go out for like our anniversary or birthday, if you get a copy of the menu and date it, it's really cool.
Yeah, and everything's a la carte. Everything's a la carte. You know, but again, these days, I don't know. It's something that, you know, I don't know, you can... You know, I guess it's a chef thing. I was always excited about going to new restaurants and getting menus, and now I've got menus and nobody uses them. I don't. Maybe I should wallpaper my wall with them,
or frame them.
Yeah, frame them.
Yeah, those are. They don't make menus like that anymore. Those are beautiful.
No, definitely not. Anyway, we wanted to talk a little bit about meal planning, and so we'll chat a little bit about that. But because I think that if you can go into your week. On the weekend, kind of be thinking about what you want to do and then plan that meal out. Get, a little pad of paper, stick it on the fridge. And first thing you want to do is take your inventory. So take, stock of everything you've got. You know, first off, everything that's perishable, right? Maybe you've got some lettuce. Maybe you've got some fresh vegetables. Whatever those perishable products are, dairy, make sure that those are items that you use. I mean, and just write them out. Then take a look in your freezer. Take a look in your cupboards. Write out a list and just start putting together a menu. But then one thing I think that's really good to consider, and I know because I just did this, was meatloaf. So we made a meatloaf. And it just had a wonderful, nice meatloaf with the red sauce on it.
Well, and that's because I went to Costco. And we always talk about Costco. It was a 6 pounds. And I was going to break up into 1 pound sections, freeze them, but we kept a pound out. We're like, okay, let's take this pound and make meatloaf out of it.
Yeah. But then you take that meatloaf and the next day you slice that. So on Monday you have meatloaf day. And then on Tuesday, maybe you have a meatloaf sandwich. And then whatever meatloaf might be left over, you kind of crumble that up and you can use a taco salad. We actually made tacos with it. But you can make a ton of stuff, and once you get that ground meat, you know, something that mom used to make this. Anytime we'd have leftover, you know, sausage and ground beef, she would make a spaghetti soup with just sauteed onions and meat and bacon. Gotta have bacon in it. And then just chopped up the spaghetti, almost like, rice-a-roni, kind of, you know how it's the small vermicelli that they have in there? Kind of brown that off. You want to brown it off to get the starch out of it so it doesn't, you know, take over your soup, because starches will take over your soup. That's one thing if you're going to use a starch. Even rice, chicken and rice soup, those cook your starches separately. And then, you know, you can take your rice, throw it in, a half a cup in a bowl, and then pour a nice hot broth over there of your chicken noodle soup. And now your chicken rice soup, you know, your rice isn't going to just continue to absorb all your broth. And now you've got this big, you know, chunky mess. But
back to the meatloaf. The thing you did the first night is you made one big meatloaf mixture, but you didn't make a meatloaf. You took that meatloaf mixture and you made it to little individual fat hamburger steaks.
Yeah, we did hamburger steaks. Well, I did half of it in hamburger steaks, which we had on Monday.
Which is
And then made a meatloaf, but didn't cook it, and then cooked it on Tuesday. And then meatloaf sandwiches the next day, and then tacos. So we kind of, you know, basically we're talking about total utilization. If you want to think of a term, total utilization. So how am I going to use that product? Maybe you're going to grill some chicken. But then maybe you're going to make a Chinese chicken salad after that. And then maybe you're going to make an egg drop soup, of course, with chicken and corn in it. So you've gotten three meals out of just one protein. So think ahead. But again, use those ingredients which are perishable. Write out an inventory. This is what we do in the kitchen. We say, what do we have? Anything that goes in the garbage, complete waste, right? Total waste. So you don't want anything to go in the garbage. So start looking at it and say, okay, how many days left? Well, let's do a
salad. Shortest shelf life first.
Yep, exactly. So first in, first out. They call it FIFO. FIFO in the restaurant business. First in, first out. You know, so go by date. You know, we go through enough milk to literally, you know, we need to probably get a couple cows between you and our son. I don't know how they go through so much milk. But again, it's just make sure that things are dated right. Make sure they rotate. You buy a new gallon of milk, it goes behind the first gallon. And that way you're not throwing anything away. If you really take notice to what you're throwing in the garbage and then say, you know what, I'm going to have to change that game plan this time so that doesn't happen. and just make sure that you're using all your food. So plan your meals at the beginning of the weekend, and then so you know next week, boom, you knock it off. I know I've been writing, you know, the cookbook on coming home first and having mom have all those little post-it notes, you know, on the refrigerator that kind of, you know, made sure that me and dinner was ready when everyone got there. So anyway, but we're going to take a quick break, and this is Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef on Cooking Like a Pro, and we will be back in just a moment.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim frim sauce with the Oz and Bay. Wish a fava on the side.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
Get ready to explore the expansive universe of aviation and cutting-edge space technology in Turtle Bay's newest exhibition, Mission Aerospace, presented by Dr. Eric and Tiffany Blassingame and produced by Minotaur Mazes, on display at Turtle Bay Museum January 18th through April 20th. This highly interactive maze puzzle is sure to inspire all generations. Mission Aerospace at Turtle Bay Museum is free for members and included with paid admission. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
A cancer diagnosis changes everything. But at Valor Oncology, located right here in Reading, you'll never face it alone. At some places, you'll see a rotating door of doctors, unfamiliar faces who don't know your history. But at Valor, you'll see the same expert team, a team that knows you, your treatment plan, and your journey. We have a Harvard-trained oncologist, a highly skilled female breast surgeon, compassionate and experienced nurses and nurse practitioners, and an incredibly dedicated staff that genuinely cares for you and your family. Our cutting-edge technology rivals top universities, but it's right here in Reading. You deserve the best care and a team that stays by your side. Call 530-900-4000 or visit valor.org to schedule a consultation. Valor Oncology, rooted in Reading, focused on you.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Monte Cristo Classic Number 2. This Figueroa has been described as one of the world's great cigars, a silky Connecticut shade wrapper in combination with the best Dominican tobaccos form this perfectly constructed cigar. The smooth aroma of toasted almonds, vanilla, coffee, and spice round out this classic stick. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones.
All right, welcome back. Chef Cal here and Mrs. Chef talking about food at Cooking Like a Pro on KCNR. If you'd like to call in here, you can always call. Give us a ring at 530-605-4567. The better way to send in a question, though, is, of course, cookinglikeapropodcast.net. Again, cookinglikeapropodcast.net. We'd be happy to answer your question if you'd rather not do it on the air. Just finishing up on these planning meals, one of the things is the days you know you're going to be busy. You know, because you look at your week, we look at our week, we have it on our schedule, and we know, wow, that week's going to be tough. We got the podcast, or that, you know, that day, rather. Then come up with a simpler menu. Come up with an easy one on that day. Maybe that day you do something that you can have in the crock pot the morning before and just, you know, dish it up when you get home and when dinner.
Those days are leftover days.
Leftover days, yeah. So, and another thing is make it fun. Experiment. Experiment and have fun with leftovers and things you have. And what I like to do is get the family involved. You know, me and Krista might do something together, and maybe she'll do a part of it. I'll do another part of it. We'll ask Isaac. Our son, he's 15 years old, and he's like this mad scientist. I don't know where he gets it from. But he's like this. He gets back there, and he starts doing his ramen. And, I mean, and this kid, he starts pulling out the seasonings. And this is a guy that really didn't do a whole lot. So I'm excited. I'm impressed. I'm proud of him. Cause he'll start throwing curry in there and cumin if he wants to go kind of a Tex-Mex direction. He likes spice. He likes things that are hot. And then we have to throw in our fresh vegetables and all that cause he's not really going too strongly that direction. He'll eat a few things.
He's still meat and potatoes.
Yeah. Well, no, he loves corn.
Oh, yeah.
He likes corn. But anyway, but have fun. get everybody involved and write it out over the weekend. Give yourself kind of a basic idea. Get your shopping done on your proteins. And then go online to, you know, Culinarily Yours and get that seasoning booklet. We've got a vegetable booklet there that, is it like 30 pages?
Yes.
And it's got so much information on seasonings. That's what I really love about that, on matching seasonings. And we were talking to someone this morning about a vegetable dish that they do, and it's an Indian dish. So you're coming up with ingredients and flavors that are different. And he was talking about a dish that used potatoes and cauliflower that was cut, diced up. But before that, you took your seeds, your fennel seeds or mustard seeds or any type of, you know, seed that you can toast. And all of a sudden you get these aromatics going. And then you build upon those with whatever it is that you want. In this case, he did diced potatoes. When those got tender, he'd steam some cauliflower and, you know, throw a lid on top of it. And now you've got this fragrance and it's a very healthy, flavorful dish. Indian food is something that's really becoming more and more popular because I see the flavor components and the ease of making it and the health benefits. You know, you go to Indian country, you don't see people that are overweight like you do here in America. Matter of fact, I don't know that you see people that are overweight like America anywhere else in the world. I know the places I've gone. I mean, but anyway, that's because in America we have this affluence. We, you know, a pizza in Italy when I was there was good, was fantastic, and it had three ingredients, and that included the sauce.
Yeah,
and
red sauce, cheese.
And here in America, if it doesn't have 15 ingredients, we don't think it's a good pizza. You know, and think about it. Step back, folks. Take a bite of that pizza. Sure, it's delicious, but can you taste all those flavors? You know, so I don't know. I think that we tend to overdo it a little bit, but there's this seasoning guide, and I'll just ask, you know, Krista here, what was kind of your premise, your idea behind when you put this together? Because I know you spent months on it, and it's available, you know, on our website. You can get it there at, I think it's, I don't know, $7 or $8 or something. But it's a wealth of information, so I would highly recommend going and getting that book. You did this. I didn't say, hey, sweetheart, I got an idea. Write a vegetable book. You just kind of started doing it on your own.
Well, I was asking people what they wanted to learn how to make. And a lot of people kept saying, I don't know how to make vegetables taste good.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of eating the same old stuff all the time. How do I make them taste different? How do I make them taste better? Because otherwise, a lot of vegetables just don't taste good.
Yeah. Well, spices, seasonings. I mean, you have hundreds of different suggestions of flavor combinations that you can do. You know, think about maybe first thing I think about is the culture. What do I want to do? Do I want to make something Italian? Do I want to make something, we were talking about Indian, do I want to make something that's Pacific Rim? Do I want to make something that's more of a Southern flair or something that's more barbecue? But come up with that idea and then take that protein and kind of go towards those seasonings. And now with the cell phone, all you have to do is say, okay, flavors that, seasonings that go well with barbecue. And boom, here comes everything. Your mesquite, your black pepper, your molasses, you know, your honey, anything that might work, your different chilies that they might work for a little bit of capsaicin.
Well, and mustard.
Spice.
Mustard's a really big one. You don't have to do with yellow mustard, but different types of mustards. Just a touch of it.
Hey, we talked about beer mustards.
Yeah, add a ton of different flavor to your finished dish.
Yeah, so, well, we talked about condiments a week or two ago. And again, you have those certain things that you go to, you know, your L&P, you know, your Lee and Perrins, there's actually your Worcestershire sauce, but they made it famous, so you kind of, that's what you go with. Kind of like Tabasco is a pepper sauce, but people know it by Tabasco. They know it by the brand name because, you know, it's kind of like Kleenex. You know, you think of Kleenex as tissue. Well, I mean, it's literally tissue, not Kleenex, but they got, you know, the name, the, you know, the, where its fame came from. But again, take a look at it. And one thing that I have to confess here that sometimes I'll make the mistake is I'll season something. Then I'll think, oh, and I know the seasonings need to melt. They need to develop in there before you add more seasoning. But I did this the other day. There was just a little bit of leftover seasoning in the bottom of the container. And I did, and I just went ahead and dumped it in there. And it ended up being too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yes. Yeah. So don't just try to unload, you know, your seasonings, but trust your mind, trust your gut, you know, trust your instinct. Very, real important. I cook probably as much by instinct than anything else.
Speaking of instincts, so last night I was picking up some groceries for my mom, and we went to Walmart, and we saw an instant minute rice cup, and it was the hot honey chicken flavor. And hot honey is huge right now,
yeah.
And so Isaac wanted to try this hot honey chicken rice. And reading the box or the directions, you take the little cup out, you stick it in the microwave for a minute, but it was not working. And when this was way too dry, and so I took it out, broke it up, add a little bit more water to it, and then mm-hmm. increase the cooking time on it. So I didn't follow the instructions on the box. I started with what the box said, then I went, this is not working. And so if it is dry, add a little water to it. If it doesn't taste cooked, cook it some more.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, now, you know, all of these products that you buy, trust me, they have corporate chefs that are, you know, behind these things, that are testing them. I, you know, did the corporate chef thing for a couple years. And you know, it should be, you know, come out the way that it's expected to come out. But then you have to back up and you have to say, okay, even something as simple as elevation makes a huge difference. If you're cooking something at sea level versus cooking it, you know, in Denver at Mile High. So those things make a difference.
Well, in our house, high humidity with the swamp cooler during the summer is going to be completely different than a house with an air conditioner.
And, you know, and when you mention microwave, I mean, what, you know.
What wattage.
Yeah. What wattage is it is, and what is your power setting?
Yeah.
Power setting makes a big difference on it. You know, is your oven regulated? If your oven says 350, you've set your oven dial to 350, and you don't have a thermostat, a high temperature gauge in there to tell you that it's 350, you might be cooking a 400. You might be cooking a 300. You have no idea because it needs to be checked. And if it's wrong, then it needs to be calibrated. So you can look into having that done, but knowing what you're cooking at.
And also, if it's an electric oven versus a gas oven, they can go completely different. Yeah. They give you totally different results.
Is the fan on? Another thing. You know, if the fan on, it's going to circulate heat, so we generally use the fan when it comes to baking items to get them evenly browned. But a fan is going to increase, you know, the amount of heat that's going into it. And, you know, sometimes, or if the fan's off and you're just cooking still. If you know, you mentioned humidity. And one of the things I do a lot, and we have this pan of rocks in the bottom of our oven, and it's just always there. It's in the very bottom, and it's just always, and sometimes we'll just squirt a little water in there to bring up the humidity if we're roasting something and we want to, you know, we don't want to become dry. You know,
steam kit.
What do you call it? Steam kit?
I actually learned it from Thomas Keller.
Thomas Keller. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's, you know, French Laundry. You know the guy that trained Thomas Keller? I worked with him for, like 8 years. Chef Roland Hennen. He's still alive. Man's just amazing. But, I hired him to be a consultant for our Olympic team when we were competing internationally. And, yeah, Roland was, he was wild. He was great. He was one of those old school. I can't remember if he's Austrian, or, you know, French, you know, that, yeah, that whole area that these chefs come from. Old school though. Definitely old school, but extremely, extremely, talented when it came to just this visionary, visionary of a chef. So, yeah, I owe a lot to Roland, but again, taste as you go, you know, flavor up, use those different seasonings, try different things. There's, you know, when you're talking about fresh herbs, that was another thing. Using fresh herbs to add that kind of brightness, especially if you're looking at a dill or a mint, and you want to add some brightness to it, then maybe go with something that's a little bit brighter. But remember that the ones that are dried, your dried herbs, are going to have about three times the strength. So if you're going to use dried basil versus fresh basil, then that basil is going to have to be cooked out. So you're going to add that in your sauce, and you're going to let that simmer. But a fresh basil, you might just kind of do a rough chop and just add it, you know, right before you dish up. You know, maybe just let it, you know, impart a little flavor in there for a couple of minutes. But you're not going to cook the heck out of it.
I think when you talk about salt, like you talked earlier, that you added some seasoning salt, pay attention to what you're adding salt to.
Yeah.
So if that already had salt in it, you know, do you need to add more salt to it? And if you're going to be adding cheese, bacon, other salty items, don't salt it until you've put those salty items together with it. Season afterwards. You can't take it out. You can add more, but you can't take it out.
You can always add more, but you're right. You can't take it out. So that's a good comment to finish this segment. We're going to take another quick break. Cooking Like a Pro, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista will be back in just a moment.
I got beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, rams, hogs, dogs, chicken, turkeys, rabbits, you name it! God damn it!
Happy New Year, Redding, from your friends at Black Bear Diner, reminding you that if you're looking for more food, more fun, and more family, this is the place to be. You can count on a warm atmosphere and deliciously fresh home-style food. It's the perfect spot for every generation, with something for everyone. Come for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive, Redding.
Black Bear Diner.
Goldleaf Nursery is celebrating 50 years in business. Yep, 50 years. Seems like yesterday our nursery and landscape business was just a little seedling itself, but the truth is, we've been serving Shasta County for 50 years, growing shrubs, trees, and veggie plants since 1975. Also, as a licensed contractor, we've landscaped shopping centers, city parks, and custom residential homes. The sale will start now and continue through springtime. All 1 gallon and larger shrubs and trees are on sale. With spring right around the corner, we have a good selection of spring shade bloomers, such as azaleas and camellias, and many other sun blooming plants to enhance your landscape in those sunny locations in the yard. This is a perfect time of the year to start preparing your vegetable garden. We have organic soils and fertilizers, including a full line of John and Bob's Organics, and we carry non-GMO seeds. So rest assured, you can have a healthy planting crop in your vegetable garden. If you have not been to Goldleaf Nursery, we invite you to check us out and see for yourself why we have so many customers tell us what a unique nursery we have. Goldleaf Nursery, 6186 Churn Creek Road, across from Tucker Oaks Golf Course, and 1/4 mile from Airport Road.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Oh yeah, that's what I want, a cheeseburger in paradise. And you know, the thing about a burger is, you know, I like taking my burger. I'm sorry. Welcome back, Cooking Like Pro. Chef Cal. This is Chef. But I like to take my burger meat and basically use the same kind of meat that I use for meatloaf and use it for a hamburger, which I always go 50% sausage and 50% ground beef. I go a mixture of both, and that makes a great burger. Now, you're going to want to cook it, you know, until it's getting around 150, 155 degrees because it's got pork in it. But, boy, you add the flavor, because pork, you're adding all that flavor with the fat and all of those juices.
So what technically is meatloaf?
It's meat that's been cooked in a loaf pan. And again, one of my favorite recipes was the one that we did at Pesce Pasta. Pesce being Italian for seafood, or fish actually, and pasta. So fish and pasta restaurant. But we did have great big meatballs in there, and we used that same meatloaf mixture. You'd use half ground beef, half sausage, mince up some onions, throw them in there. Bacon is something a lot of people put in their meatloaf. You know, bacon's been cured, so it doesn't have to, you know, cook to 160 degrees. But then some vegetables, generally, you know, chopped up onions and bell peppers. And then you want it to hold together. And here's kind of the key to meatloaf. So your seasonings, you can go any direction you want. Italian seasoning, thyme, oregano, basil, any of those Italian-type seasonings that you have. Whether they're fresh, again, or whether they're dried. Again, remember, dried is gonna add more flavor. But the key is going to be having that meatloaf hold together. And that's where it becomes a loaf. And you get that by adding a binding agent, which in French cooking we would call a panade. What it actually is, which would be like ground bread that's been ground up. So you need to have a binding agent. So you're going to use eggs, and then you're going to add, dry that out with a panade or some kind of bread. Panko is a great product to use, Italian breadcrumbs.
Well, I grew up with rice in my meatloaf. Yeah. I had never had breadcrumbs in my meatloaf until I met you.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're going to use rice, that's a mixture that my mom would do, but she would stuff it in cabbage leaves and make cabbage rolls. Ooh, boy, cabbage rolls.
Can't so basically, wrong. It is a ground protein.
A ground, yeah, with a ground meat.
So some sort of ground meat with a bulk of a grain, some sort of a grain or bread, yeah. And then the egg is as a binding.
Yeah, the egg binds it together with the starch from the bread. So the Italian seasoning or the breadcrumbs or the panko, rather, those will dry it back out and will hold it together. So when you cook it, you want to make sure there's no air bubbles in it. So we've got our loaf pans. If you've noticed your loaf pans, you want a really good heavy loaf pans, especially when you're making meatloaf. Cover it, cook it halfway, covered with foil, and then and you don't want the foil touching the meat because you don't want the acid in the meatloaf to pull any of that aluminum off.
Speaking of acid, you usually add a little bit of a tomato. Or something, a ketchup or something to it?
Ketchup, barbecue sauce, anything like that. Any kind of a flavoring like that. So you got your half beef, half sausage, your vegetables, you know, your onion and bell pepper, you got your eggs, binded it together with that panade, that bread. And then I throw in any kind of, like you mentioned, tomato sauce. A lot of people put ketchup on top of their meatloaf and roast it off, halfway. Without a cover, and then halfway without, so it kind of browns a little bit, and then just let it cool down. But once you've put your meat in your loaf pan, before you cook it, pound that down on a counter a little bit. Just tap it to get all the air bubbles out of there. Because if you want to get a nice meatloaf sandwich, then you want to slice a nice thin piece of meatloaf. It's got to be, you know, together. It's got to be thick enough where you can get a nice slice on it.
So what would be your percentages? Let's say a pound of meat, or let's say 2 pounds even. Would you do one egg per pound? And then about how much binding bulk type stuff do you add to it?
Yeah, I'd go with usually if I'm like, well, the recipe that I have actually in front of me here is 2 pounds ground beef, 2 pounds pork sausage, and it comes with 3 fresh eggs and then breadcrumbs until they're dry. Usually I would say about a half to 3/4 of a cup.
So basically, about an egg per pound, and then add your breadcrumbs after to get to the right texture.
Yeah. And then, you know, you add your sauce, you add your seasoning, mix it up together, tap it down to get the air out of it, and bake it until you're, you know, 155 and climbing. You pull it out, and you've still got it nice and juicy because you've reached your 160 with your carryover time. And you got meatloaf to start with, so you got your meatloaf and then your meatloaf sandwich and everything else.
What temperature, about 350, 400?
Yep, 350, 400 degrees. You know, it's something that you want to cook until, again, it depends on the oven, depends on how much you're making, depends on the size of the pan. It depends on a lot of things, but get a direct response thermometer and make sure that you hit 160 because you've got pork in there. And let it, you know, it doesn't need to really rest much. And then, you know, you want it nice and hot. And then whatever sauce, you can do a brown mushroom gravy over it. You could do a red sauce like we did, more of a, like an Italian kind of a sauce for your meatloaf.
And this mixture also would be for meatballs.
Yeah. Yep, meatballs, same thing. You just
different shape.
Yeah, you know, get this big mixture, make some meatloaf, make some meatballs. You know, meatballs, freeze them. One thing you can do with your meatballs is roll them up and freeze them on a pan. Then once they're frozen, then put them in a baggie and ziplock them and keep them in the freezer. In the restaurant business, we call that IQF. It just stands for individually quick frozen. So you can just grab, you know, maybe you make a couple dozen meatballs, but you only need, you know,
a half a dozen.
Yeah. So pull out a half a dozen, cook them off, throw them in with your, you know, one thing you want to do with your meatballs is cook them in your sauce. You can cook them, you know, in the oven too, but make sure that the meatballs eventually simmer in your sauce because that's where your sauce gets that really rich, robust Italian flavor by allowing those meatballs to kind of just simmer in there. But again, have fun. Be creative. You know, I mean, to make a meatloaf, you can go so many different directions in it. You know, I mean, say you want to do Asian. Take that same mixture and put it in and make a little dim sum out of it. Make a little pork bun out of it. You know, make a wonton out of it. You can use the same mixture. Generally, they're going to use all pork, but there's no one saying you can't use pork
and
beef.
What if you want to use ground turkey or ground chicken? What would you do if you want to do kind of an Asian lean to a ground turkey or chicken.
Well, same thing. You know, any of those poultry items make great dim sum. Make great pot stickers. You know, when you come to Asian dumplings is basically the category we're talking about. Something that's encased in a dough to turn it into a dumpling. And any type of a shape you want to do, you know, let's say you wanted to go towards a Hispanic, take the same thing and stuff it inside of a cornmeal, and then you got an empanada.
Oh, I'm thinking of stuffed bell peppers.
Stuffed bell peppers are a great. And that's a dish you never see in a restaurant. Imagine going to a restaurant and getting a beautiful stuffed bell pepper. You know, people would have, you know, no idea. But it's great. That's the kind of stuff
zucchini.
We were raised on.
Stuff, you know, summer is going to come around, and then you got those zucchinis. What do you do with them?
Yeah, especially when you get the big one. When you get the big ones, and you don't want your zucchinis to get too big. They get too big, they're like a baseball bat or something. You know, they get really woody. And they kind of hollow inside, and the skin gets really, really tough on them. Zucchini, yellow squash, any of those crookneck squash, patty pan squash. I love it when that time of year comes around because those are all very, very soft vegetables. They're not dense at all, so they cook really quick, and you can really, you know, saute them up and get some great flavor out of it.
So, and those vegetables can be a part of the mixture, of a meatloaf mixture.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can anything. You know, you can throw in the bowl. You know, when you're making a mixture like that, anything that you want to just, you know, kind of tie together. But, you know, have fun with it. That's a big thing. Another thing is, like, you know, when you go shopping, here's one thing I wanted to touch on. Shop in the different parts of the store. Most all stores have ethnic kind of areas. You know, here's an area that has, you know, your Asian or Pacific Rim type seasonings. That's where you get your, maybe your nori and your seaweed or your chuka salad or you're just a, you know, your, pineapple teriyaki sauce and
pickle
your
ginger.
Sweet and sour. Yeah, all of those type of condiments, your sesame seeds, those different things that you would use. And then just have those as your condiments section. Basically your pantry. You can have them in your dry pantry and then also in your refrigerator. You know, we always have sriracha, you know, ginger, garlic sauce, those kind of things that one ingredient completely changes it to go to another direction. You know, how about an Indian section? You know, and if you can find an actual store that's all they sell. You know, we have several Asian markets here in town and you can go to them and I used to get all my quail, I'd get there, all my chuka salad, all of my green papaya. If you want to do a green papaya salad, you can get it, and it's already, you know, julienned up. Just beautiful product and very fresh, and, you know, there's nothing added to it. You know, so it's, you know, so go shopping in an Asian market, look around, experiment, have fun.
Well,
you know,
that's
some things
how
don't
you
work.
Take food. If you're saying, I'm tired of having the same thing every night.
We have
a basic, you've got your pork, you got your beef, you got your chicken. That's kind of where you start. Where you take, what direction, what ethnicity you take it in, what sauce you use. If it's a Mexican sauce or an Italian sauce or an Asian sauce, that's where you start to lean and get your different items.
And your different flavors. And just, again, have fun with it. I know that we've mentioned Indian a couple of times, but there was a seasoning that the gentleman we were talking to this morning said, oh, you got to add this. You got to add this. So pull that up and ask, because I don't, I'm not going to try to pronounce it. It was an Indian, because, you know, in Indian food, you get a lot of curry. You get a lot of really earthy flavored ingredients.
Yeah, I had never heard of it before. It's called asafoetida.
Yeah, okay. Why don't you spell it? Just spell it.
And then you guys can look it up. Asafoetida.
All right, one more time.
Asafoetida. Asafoetida.
And see, when you get those ingredients, then all of a sudden now you've got the authentic flavor of, you know, for example, when I travel, I always eat what the locals eat. You know, if I'm over in Hawaii, I go and I have Spam. Now, you know, I actually was in the store the other day and I seen the Spam, and they have so many different Spams. They have slow sodium Spam.
low sodium Spam.
Yeah. and turkey Spam. And my thought is, if you're going to eat Spam, just go for the good old, you know, what it
classic
is.
Classic Spam.
You know, the classic Spam. Yeah. But anyway, you know what? I remember looking that up before. I can't remember why Spam is in Hawaii, but I think it might have had to do with, you know, like, Pearl Harbor, and we had a lot of soldiers and military there. And Spam was kind of one of those things you just pop open a can, kind of like Vienna sausages or something. But anyway, when you're in a grocery store and you're mulling around, check out all the different places. Check out the different things that they have, because they're putting a lot of marketing insight and understanding into it, and they come up with these sections. So try some cool stuff. You know, again, there's a lot out there, so might as well just practice and make it fun. So, all right, we're taking our last break here at Cooking Like a Pro. We'll be back in just a moment.
For this is the night, it's a beautiful night, and we call it a bella notte.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with department staff with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is financial advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Welcome back. Chicken Soup with Rice. I think we were talking about that earlier. All right. I'd like to thank Ben for finding that bumper for us. But anyway, Cooking Like a Pro, and we're into our last segment here. And I wanted to talk a little bit about pasta. You know, when you start looking at items that are going to be, you know, less expensive, and you're looking for cost savings, you can't go wrong with pasta. But I'll tell you, if you're going to do pasta, I just highly recommend start practicing and making it yourself. It's super easy to make. You can get an extruder. Extruder would just, that's where you're going to make your, you know, your different molded items, your spaghetti, your penne pasta, your rigatoni, those kind of items. But you can also just have a flat pasta roller, and you can cut your fettuccine, your parpadelle, your, you know, any of your other, you know, flat noodles. But I always try to get noodles that have holes in them, like your rigatoni and your, moscacoli and your penne, because then you get more flavor, because you get flavor on the inside of the pasta versus just on the outside of the pasta, kind of like spaghetti or lasagna noodles. But you can also do the gnocchi, but you're really just talking about flour, egg, and oil and salt. You know, some recipes might use a little bit of water, but it's really, you just make a well, get your flour down, crack a couple eggs in, a little bit of salt, and just start mixing up with a fork. Get yourself a dough. Again, super, super simple and very inexpensive. Get yourself a good flour. Get a nice whole wheat flour. And you're making something that's very healthy. You know, I mean, if you're not looking for carbs, there's other alternatives you can do. They make pasta out of, you know, cauliflower and just
rice.
Yeah.
Brown rice.
Yeah. There's a ton of different, you know, grains that you can use. But, you know, I was looking through some of the recipes I found, and there was a chef that I worked with, oh, God, decades ago, Chef Jeff, and I found one of his recipes, and it was a fettuccine dish, and it had spinach, cilantro, onion, bacon, pepperoncini, and roasted red peppers. You know, so basically you're just talking about, you know, just a blended pasta dish with what, you know, and you can add any of the ingredients. I'd probably use some kind of a sauce just to kind of bind it together. Maybe a cream sauce, you know, fettuccine Alfredo. Think about a fettuccine Alfredo. It's just, you know, your fettuccine, and it's only just cream and then Parmesan cheese. But then let's say you want to make it more exciting. Why don't you throw some mushrooms in there? Why don't you throw some spinach in there? Throw some chicken in there.
Sun-dried tomatoes.
Another real good one.
So you got that acid to counter all that cream.
Yeah. So, you know, cream is going to coat your tongue a little bit. So having some kind of acid always helps with that. And another thing is cooking pasta. A lot of people have trouble cooking pasta. And one of the things I probably see most, the biggest error that I see when people cook pasta is they don't stir it enough. So we had this thing that we kind of came up with. We call it pasta 1-2-3. All right, you want to explain the pasta 1-2-3, hon?
Pasta 1-2-3. Okay, got your water boiling.
Uh-huh.
Drop your pasta in and stirring immediately so that you're keeping the water agitated and everything doesn't start immediately sticking together.
Mm-hmm.
Then set your timer. Go for 1 minute. Stir. Get everything broken up. 2 minutes. Stir. Get everything broken up. Go for 3 minutes. Stirs, because the more that, and each time you can go up to 4 minutes, you can go up to 5 minutes mm-hmm. until it's actually cooked, but you can keep adding another minute each time because you've gotten everything separated and it's not getting together like glue.
Yeah, so after the 1-2-3, so stir it 1 minute, stir it 2, stir it 3. Now you know it's not going to, you know, be stuck together, and then go 5 minutes and you're done. And between 5 and 6 minutes, depending, you know, a really thin, what we call a vermicelli, or, you know, like a really thin spaghetti. You know, it's going to be done in 6 or 7 minutes. But your basic extruded pastas are going to take between 12 to 13 minutes to cook.
And if it's a whole wheat pasta, they take way longer than your basic white pastas.
Yep. But all you really have to do is take a piece out and test it. And there's a couple different ways to do that. But we'd take a piece out and put it immediately into a little cup with some cold water and then taste it. And you want al dente, right? You want your teeth to, you don't want it crunchy and you don't want it soft. You want slight resistance between your teeth before your teeth break through it. And that's al dente. And that's really what you want. Again, for vegetable cookery, for pasta cookery, you want it al dente. But I had a much funner way of doing it when I was a kid, which was taking the spaghetti out and we threw it on the ceiling. That was probably one of the most exciting things that I started off at a young age of 9 years old, just enjoying my chore of preparing dinner for everybody and cooking spaghetti just so I could throw it onto the ceiling. And I'm sure if you go back in our houses back in the day, you could probably still find some up there.
I grew up throwing it on the wall. Spaghetti on the wall because we had tile walls in the kitchen. So, yeah, I would throw it on the wall.
I just throw it straight up. And what happens is when you're cooking your pasta, that starch is coming out. When that starch cooks out, your pasta is going to be tender, but it's also going to be sticky. So you throw it up on the wall and it sticks. Go ahead and drain it. Hit it with a little hot water to get that extra starch off. And then you're done, right? Now you can go whatever direction you want. Bring it up, saute pan with a little oil, a little brown butter, a little garlic, whatever you want to do to flavor it.
Okay, so what are your thoughts? Because I hear this all the time. You're supposed to save your pasta water and add a little bit to your sauce.
You can to thin it out. I don't know that, you know, how necessary that is, but if your sauce is too thick, you can use it to thin it out. I think it's more of a total utilization, people that don't want to throw stuff out. I don't really see much of a need to add more carb back to it. You know, if I was going to thin it out, I'd probably just use some kind of a stock, some
does
kind of flavored broth.
Does any of the starch that cooked out the pasta help thicken the sauce? Because you're adding back starch.
Yes, it's definitely going to help thicken it, but you shouldn't need to thicken it. If anything, usually they'll add it to thin it down. But again, I know same thing with potatoes. A lot of times they'll use potato water. But, you know, I think that you cook it. You rinse it off, and now you've got this cooked al dente pasta that's already cooled. You can do that on your weekend and just have your spaghetti. The shelf life on it, if you cool it down properly, is going to be well over a week. So maybe on Wednesday you have spaghetti. And then maybe on Friday you chop it up and make spaghetti soup. You know, so there's a lot of different things you can do, but kind of be thinking ahead about that. Usually with Italian pastas, you either go the direction of a red sauce or the direction of a cream sauce. Other things you can do, but that's generally the two things that you do. And one of the things that I like is I'll take my red sauce and turn it into a bolognese. And I just love that sauce. You just take your basic spaghetti sauce and you're going to add bacon, Parmesan, cream, and red pepper flakes.
That one's actually on the website.
Yeah, bolognese.
Sauce bolognese.
Oh, sauce bolognese is on our website?
Yes, it is.
Well, go to Culinary Yours or Google Cooking Like a Pro podcast. You'll find it. And, yeah, bolognese is just a beautiful sauce. You know, it's just, you know, but the chili, the pepper flakes. The bacon makes it distinctive, but the pepper flakes gives it that little bit of, you know, I don't know. I like it. A little zip
a little
to
smokiness.
It.
Smokiness.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, and that's another direction you can go if you want to, you know, go with something that's smoky. You've got your chipotles out there, especially if you want to go that direction. I'm always careful with smoke because smoke can is real easily overpower something. So you have to be careful on your smoke, especially if when you're, I don't want to start going into barbecuing now. And actually, we do have a barbecue booklet that's free. It's on the website. Go pull that off. There's 3 or 4 pages on anything.
Yeah,
everything you want to know about barbecuing. Yeah, it's on there. It's very good, very thorough. But smoking can be too much. That's like smoked, like Hungarian paprika. If you use that, it's a smoked paprika where they, you know, paprika is really just bell peppers. You know, so the heat level is like zero. But when they smoke it, you know, or if they smoke a chipotle, which a chipotle is just a smoked jalapeno. They let the jalapeno stay on the vine and let it turn red, and then they smoke those, and that's what they use for chipotle. But it's very, very powerful. You want to go very, very easy with it, at least easy hand on that one.
Back to pasta. If you wanted to use pesto as a sauce, the pesto is very pungent. So how would you say if you cook your pasta, how would you use it?
Yeah, I would say probably about 1 ounce per person. You know, you say you want to use your fettuccine, you can use your spaghetti, use your linguine, any of those items, have them cooked off separately, al dente, ready to go. Got your pan, get your oil hot, throw in your garlic, throw in your pasta, bring your pasta up to temperature, and then throw in your pesto, because your pesto doesn't need to be cooked. It just needs to be, it's a flavoring
just
you're going to add. But then again, at that point, you can add a little cream, a little heavy cream. We always keep heavy cream on hand. We don't use a lot of it in any particular dish, but it's a great item to have on hand. First off, the shelf life on heavy cream is probably, what, 4 times longer than milk?
Oh, yeah.
So it's going to last a while. But sometimes just a little shot of cream, let that cook down, and your cream will actually thicken up and make just a beautiful sauce, especially if you want a nice pesto dish. That's gnocchi is another one that we do. We actually did that the other night at home. But really easy to make, especially if you're going to make a gnocchi is generally going to be made out of potatoes. So it's just potato flour and eggs. And, you know, can generally a little bit of salt, you know, a little bit of flavor enhancer is going to be on there. But think about your pastas, that your pasta flavors are generally going to be in your sauce. The pasta itself doesn't have much flavor.
It's very neutral.
Yeah, exactly. Very good word. Very, very neutral. Middle of the road. And then what are we going to add to this? Again, we mentioned red. We mentioned white. We mentioned, you know, pesto, which pesto is just kind of like a, you know, almost like a, if it was a Tex-Mex, it would be more what we'd call a chimichurri, you know, if it was more of a Hispanic thing. But it's just a bunch of chopped herbs in an oil and a pesto. You're always going to have your basil or you're going to have your herb, whatever it is. We use basil, oil, pine nuts and Parmesan. Again, basil, Parmesan, oil, maybe a little bit of salt in there.
A little hint of lemon juice, too.
And your nuts. And the nuts we always use, traditionally, you want to use pine nuts. And I know they're really expensive, but you don't need much. Pine nuts are very distinctive flavor. And if you really want to make a good first class pesto, you got to use your pine nuts, right? Your herb, your oil, your cheese, and your nuts.
When we had a bulk amount of cilantro, I made a cilantro almond pesto.
Yeah.
And that's excellent on sandwiches.
You know, any nut, any herb, a little bit of oil, and almost any cheese, you know, so it's, you've got this process of making something.
You just stick it in a food processor.
And then you just, kind of just mix and match until you come up with something that's cool. And again, great spread. You put olives in there and you got what we call a tapenade. Just spread it on bread, spread it on crostini, spread it on crackers, all kinds of things. But anyway, we'd like to thank, Charlu's Tap House for sponsoring the show. Head on down there and check out their new adventure room. They got a beautiful adventure room for kids and all kinds of pasta and pizza and everything we've been talking about down in the Gateway Shopping Center down south of town. Tell them Chef Cow and Mr. Chef Krista sent you. Cooking like a pro. We'll look forward to talking to you next week. God bless you and have a great weekend when it finally gets here.
KCNR Shasta Reading.
Your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.